Blog Talk Radio.
A licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer Radio Show, where we give away more chicken coops and chicken related prizes than anyone else on the planet. We are often imitated, but never duplicated. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer, author of The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens. My co-host is Pat Foreman, author of City Chicks, Chicken Tractor, and other great titles. Pat happens to be on vacation this week. Today is Monday, July 30th. I would like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. When you're on the road as much as I am, kind of lose track of what day it is. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Each week, we welcome experts in their field to share their knowledge about different topics, including backyard poultry, show poultry, heritage poultry, gardening, cooking, and you guessed it, living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Be sure to visit our website, chickenwhisperer.com, where you can follow us on Twitter and become a fan on Facebook. Once again, I would like to thank all of you for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, pens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing. And you can find all the great Ware products here. Critter-Cages.com is your one-stop shop for all your critters' housing needs. They stock a wide selection of supplies and equipment for rabbits, guinea pigs, hamsters, mice, rats, ferrets, chinchillas, chickens, and other small critters. Their chicken selection includes chicken barns, chicken coops, and chicken yards from top manufacturers. Your critters will love their selection of quality products, and you'll love their low prices. Visit them online at critter-cages.com. That's critter-cages.com. When you need an incubator, think Brensey, the incubation specialist. Brensey has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brensea.com. Brensea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brensea.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brensea, technology you can trust. Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks,
pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com. That's mthealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
Hi, I'm country music artist Nathan Osmond, and you're listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
Alrighty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. We've got a great, great show lined up for you today. It is Monday, which means we are glad to have back Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor. And we've got a great topic today, very interesting topic, something you may not often think about. Do chickens have a sense of smell? You know, we understand kind of their eyes and how important their eyes are to them, and how we've talked about how many taste buds they have and how they taste before with Dr. McCray. But I don't think we've had a show on whether they have a sense of smell or not. So interesting, because we know they'll be attracted to the watermelon, the red color for that, and they like certain feeds. You'll see them, they'll pick and move their, take their beak and scatter the food a little bit, trying to find for that one scrumptious little morsel of whatever they're looking for. But is it a taste issue? Is it a color issue? What about smell? How often does smell come? And we know, you know, it's like the ammonia. If you don't clean your coop like you should, the ammonia issue, we know it can affect their eyes. We know it can make the chickens go blind. But what about, do they smell that ammonia being so close down to those shavings? So sense of smell, very interesting topic today here on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Kind of expected. I'm on the road again. I guess we wrapped up an 18-day road trip, which was a combination book tour, meet the fans, / vacation. And we rolled back into town, I believe it was on Wednesday, late Wednesday of last week, and then got back to the homestead enough to kind of get some laundry done, clean it up a little bit, do some yard work, and then lo and behold, this morning at 8 o'clock, we're hitting the road again. So I wasn't sure if I was going to be able to do the show today. I was really hoping so, because it's been so long, you know, with our time on the road and the busy schedule, plus the week vacation where we don't broadcast, because I got to spend time with my awesome family. But today I was on the road, and we had to make a couple of detours, dropping the dogs off at the vet and whatnot. And I thought, oh my goodness gracious, am I going to get there in time? It's going to be close. But sure enough, we pulled in. And I kind of procrastinated because I wanted a good deal. And so I was procrastinating to get this hotel room. We're actually now on Jen's work schedule. She's got some professional development training tomorrow and the next day here in Atlanta. So we had to come on up here to Atlanta, and we thought, well, while we're up here, we're close to my dad, so we'll go ahead and visit him. I wasn't sure when the next time we'd be this close, so we're going to visit him there. So all for the next 5 days, we'll be on the road. Just checked into the hotel, pulled in, checked in. Jen happened to run in and say, hey, do you happen to have a room turned over? And they did, so wow. Pulled right up, walked on in, zipped on up, got the internet going up, and wow, we're broadcasting live. So on the road again, absolutely, with Willie and Waylon and the whole gang. So gotta love it. So I'm so glad that we could get everything going. Let me get a sound check in the chat room, because you never know. I don't know on my end how good we're sounding with the internet here at the hotel. I've got my backup 4G Verizon if I need to use it, and I've got a backup after that, which is just basically call into the studio line with my phone. So sounding great. Thank you very much, BYP down in Florida. Appreciate that. Thanks, Jessica. Thanks, Paul. And thank you very much. And so very, very good. Got to love it. So we're on the road, but tomorrow, I'm just going to say tomorrow on Wednesday, I'm going to do my darn best, being that, you know, we've got a pretty nice room here and pretty nice connectivity. I will have Chicken Whisperer Jr. with me, Caleb, because Jen will be in training all day. But I still anticipate, I don't see a reason right now why there wouldn't be a show tomorrow or Wednesday. But Thursday and Friday actually look pretty good. So we'll see what happens. Unless we leave sometime Friday to get back down to the homestead and beat the traffic through Atlanta, Friday may be the only day that's questionable right now regarding a radio show. So You know me. I love my job. Best job in the world. Love my fans. Love my listeners. I'll do whatever I can, I promise you, to get this the show broadcast. I know it's such a great part of your day, and it is mine as well. So, so we're back. We had a great What a great show Friday. Hopefully you tuned in on Friday. If not, I encourage you to go listen to the archive at iTunes or podcast.com or Zoom.com or any of the others that carry this podcast of the show. But what a fun show. We gave away a lot of prizes, including an awesome chicken coop. So, yes, we do a show every single day, Jessica, Monday through Friday, 12 to 2. Sometimes a little short based on meetings or conference calls or touring or whatever. But normally we've got the radio show live every day, Monday through Friday, from 12 to 2. And sometimes it's spotty based on our road schedule, travel schedule. But that may be slowing down here a little bit. In fact, I posted last night on the Facebook fan page, I said, wow, just got back from an 18-day road trip, spent a couple of days at the homestead, now we're back on a 5-day road trip. I said, I wonder if this TV show pans out. Again, keeping my fingers crossed, but I'm not holding my breath. There's a difference there. I think it would be really neat to be able to educate the masses. You know, we're trying to do that now with being on the road as much as we can, the radio show, the book, the tour, the Facebook page. But so I'm keeping my fingers crossed, because it'd be a real great avenue to educate folks about the backyard poultry movement. But at the same time, you know, it probably means a lot of time on the road with the family. And I've been down this road before. Over the last 4 years, 5 years of doing this full time, I've had the occasional TV producer call me, and they always want something crazy or nutty or drama or this or that. And I'm not all about that. I said, no, absolutely not. I'm not going to be your crazy chicken dude. This is serious business. This is a serious movement. And we want to educate. We want to be more like a This Old House or a Martha Stewart or a kind of a Rachel Ray than we want to be a Jerry Springer. So we want to educate the masses. So that's what we want to do with backyard poultry. So again, fingers crossed, but I'm not getting my hopes up. If it doesn't happen, it'll be the fourth or fifth time it hasn't happened, and we'll just roll with the punches, and I still have got the best job in the world. So, but anyway, it's good to be here with you. The chat room slowly but surely filling up. Thank you very much for tuning in today. Again, here in Texas, we'll welcome Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor. I think tomorrow is a fifth Tuesday, so we don't have any special guests scheduled specifically for tomorrow. I'll see what I can do. I have a couple in mind that I'll invite later this afternoon. If they can come in and fill the spot tomorrow, being that it is a fifth Tuesday. But Peter Brown today, looks like this Wednesday is the 1st of August. Oh, my word, where did the year go? And, I mean, holy cow, the year has flown by so, so fast. Next thing you know, we're going to turn around, and it's going to be, I don't know, maybe Christmas. So where in the world did the day go, the year go? But okay, so it looks like tomorrow, Wednesday, the 1st of August, and that means, hey, Garden Wise Living with Arlena. You can tune in and see what specialty wine she's going to be sipping on and hear a great garden topic. This Thursday, I've already confirmed, Dr. Bridget McCray, PhD, poultry scientist, small flock specialist, will be here. And then this Friday, again, out of all the shows, Friday show is the most questionable. If we don't have a show Friday, we'll give away the Friday prizes, hopefully on Facebook Friday and over the weekend. So that's the deal there. Also, Friday, if you missed it, we not only gave away an awesome chicken coop from SnapLockChickenCoops.com. brand new chicken coop on the market. It's a micro coop. There's a whole new line of micro coops that are coming into play, coming to market. And they're not for everybody, but they are. They do serve a purpose, and they serve a purpose for a lot of people. You know, maybe the retired couple that only wants three or four chickens. They don't want to go chicken crazy. They don't want more than three or four. That's all they want. Maybe they have large fowl breeds, and they do want to come in with some bantams, and only want to have three or four bantams. Great. So they're smaller coops. They're micro coops. They're really meeting a need that's out there. And we gave away a chicken coop on Friday to a young lady up in New Jersey. So very, very, very cool. You guys in New Jersey won the chicken coop. So that was awesome. And also on Friday we announced we are giving away yet another chicken coop. How cool is that? And is it hot outside? Yeah, Jen just came in with Caleb, and it's very, very hot. Did you pull the stroller out of the car? Yeah, there it is. But it's too hot for really to walk around. Okay. Okay. Well, you know, there's a Cracker Barrel right next door. You can go get me some lunch. Gotta love Cracker Barrel. Maybe we need to contact them for a sponsorship when we're on the road. And then we can say, hey, we're eating at the Cracker Barrel off of exit 345. Come and join us. So I don't even know where I was at. Chicken coops. So we're giving away another chicken coop here for the month of August. This time, it'll be a coop from mypetchicken.com. Derek and Tracy, how cool is that? They basically donate us a coop every other month throughout the year. And then we're working with Snap Lock Chicken Coops. In fact, mypetchicken.com carries the Snap Lock Chicken Coop, so you can get it there. So got to love it. And, yeah, CW is always sidetracked when food is mentioned, especially Cracker Barrel. Got to love it. Maybe we can get some chicken and dumplings, or maybe are those multigrain pancakes. Oh, they're so good. Yeah, supper, dinner by candle lamp. What is a candle lamp? What is it? Oil lamp, yeah. Instead of a dinner by candlelit dinner, we have an oil lamp lit dinner there at the. But yeah, they have some awesome multi-grain pancakes. They are delicious. And then on Sundays they've got the homestyle chicken. Oh, that's good on Sundays. Let me tell you what. So I like to get a vegetable plate there a lot because it's hard to find vegetable plates on the road. And so I try to get that occasionally when we're there as well. But who doesn't? I mean, just great selection all day there at. The Cracker Barrel. So let's see what else we got going on here today. Let me go over here to let's just go ahead and see. And not quite. Hadn't called in quite yet. A couple more minutes, and we'll see. I'm sure Peter Brown, the chicken doctor, that has called in. Trying to think any other great stuff that's been going on lately. I've been seeing chickens in the news a lot come across the desk through the emails, and a lot of towns now are still trying and still working to try to get. That was a sneak attack yawn if you heard it. Trying to get the laws passed, and we, you know, we love helping folks try to do that. Don't reinvent the wheel. We've done it many a times, and we're pretty successful with helping people get the laws changed, so don't reinvent the wheel. Try to contact us. We're very busy, but we'll try to take some time out while we're on the road to give you a phone call, give you some tips and tricks and what to expect and things like that regarding getting the laws changed about backyard poultry. So we hope to be able to do that. But, yeah, we're going to give away. I don't know exactly how the contest is going to work yet with the chicken coop. Oh, my goodness, little CW. Oh, goodness gracious, CW Jr. So I'm not sure exactly how the coop contest is going to work for this coming month of August. I'm not sure. I doubt it'll be another password collection contest. It may just be an enter and win. Not real sure, but we'll see how it works. I want to have something kind of fun. And then, of course, we want to make sure that everybody can participate with Facebook, Twitter, and, of course, the radio show and anybody else out there. So let me just get in here to the chat room real quick and say hello to everybody. Let's see. Is that I can't even start to pronounce that first one up there. Con Straighten. I apologize. I'm destroying it, but welcome to the show. We've got Bard Rock, BYP386. We got Chaz Squirrel. We got Critter Lover. We got several guests in there today. We got I Endure. Let's see what else we got here. Jessica's in there. We've got Moto Clown. We've got New Dawn Farm Girl. Paul is in there, Moto Clown. Trish, good to see you. I hadn't seen you in there in a little while. And, of course, Walter. And then maybe here in a few minutes, we'll have a sweet potato. Maybe Carmen, if she remembers to come on in here, and all the others that are out there that are listening that can't access the chat room because your work has blocked it. How dare them block the Chicken Whisperer radio show. My goodness. So we're having fun in the chat room, and little man's back in here playing with some toys. Maybe he'll be happy with what we brought him. You don't eat the Lego man. No. You come see Daddy? You the man. All righty. So let's see. I always have trouble with my name. It's hard to say. New Dawn Farm Girl. Yeah, because, sometimes that New Dawn Farm Girl. NDFG. Maybe that's a little bit easier to say. it's actually Charleston. What is that? Is that squirrel? Yeah, Charleston. Okay, gotcha. Jessica CW, I do have trouble calling in. She has the magic jack, and it won't let her call in to the radio show. That's interesting, but you can listen live, I guess, online. And let's see. I can't use magic jack, full stop. My voice hits frequencies that disconnect the phone. Interesting. Okay. We tried Magic Jack one time, and it worked pretty good. I can see where it might work for some people. Welcome, Laura's Petting Zoo. Thanks very much, a new listener and a new friend in the chat room. We appreciate that coming in. Let's get over here, and hadn't called, not quite. So maybe he got on the line here, and maybe he's helping somebody with their chicken issue. Let me go ahead and refresh the switchboard page, and we'll see what we've got here. Okay, very good. I got some exciting information. In fact, Jen, you don't even know this yet. In fact, I was just really quickly checking my email, but you remember that the marketing firm up in New Jersey that we worked with the United States Department of Agriculture, and they picked us up when we were in New York on an event and drove us to an event, and we talked and all. In the last couple of years, I have officially been the national spokesperson for the United States Department of Agriculture Biosecurity for Birds program, and their contract as the marketing firm that included my role was up for a bid again, and they contacted me and wanted to include me officially in the bid to try to make it a little perk, saying, hey, you know, we want your business again as this marketing firm for USDA Biosecurity for Birds. And we got something that nobody else has, and that is the Chicken Whisperer. And we can do webinars, we can do seminars, we can do run ads on the radio show, Facebook, Twitter, the whole nine yards. So I got an email actually this morning that they actually won the contract, and I've been awarded the contract for the next couple of years. And so that puts me still being the official national spokesperson for the USDA Biosecurity for Birds program. So I'm kind of excited about that. Again, I take that job very seriously because you know me and my opinion of most government agencies. Those of you who have been listening a long time. So when my fans were concerned about what I was doing and accepting that role, I had to reassure them that you have to pretend that, you know, or realize that I am the liaison between you and them. And so will they listen to me any more than they'll listen to you? Probably not. But but the deal is that, you know, pretend like you now have a good guy on the inside, that someone can share your beliefs, share your opinion, share your concerns about different programs that they've got. And so, and I can share that with them, being their national spokesperson. I say, look, this is what they're concerned about. This issue. Can you explain to me why you don't think it's going to be an issue when all these people out there are going to be, you know, having an issue with this? And they know I was adamantly against the national identification, national animal identification system. They know I was adamantly and very verbally against that program for the cost and the tracking issue and things like that. I don't know if it would have helped prevent not one single illness on that, and I'm still pretty adamantly against the national animal identification system, NAIS. They've named it something else now, and I'm still not real fond of it. They know that, but my role is really all about educating the folks about how to keep their flocks healthy from disease and try to identify and pinpoint and diagnose and things. But for the most part, I can be the liaison to them from you. So we'll see. That and 50 cents might get me a half a cup of coffee, but we'll see how that happens. But still, nonetheless, it does give some credence when I go to speak at different places and add that to the title when I'm speaking in front of the speaking in front of the sheeple there on city council. So did I say sheeple? Good Lord, have mercy. Let's rewind. The wonderful and respected city councilmen across the country that are wondering about allowing backyard poultry. There, I just rewound that. So if you listen to the archive. Oh, my goodness gracious. All righty. Let's say thank you to all the over-the-road truck drivers out there. I appreciate you letting me know where all the popo and the police are when I'm hitting up the road listening to the CB radio. So thank you for keeping me informed of all the police that are out there on my road trips, all the over-the-road truck drivers. And thanks for listening to the show. I get emails from you on occasion. All the feed and seeds across the country that tune into the show, stream it live every day. Thank you very much. And, of course, the homeschoolers that listen to the show. I guess we're all getting, let's see. Hope you check your Facebook messages as well as your email. I sent you a message. Hopefully you'll be interested. You know, it's funny, and I'm going to say this. I see Peter Brown and Chicken Doctor's on, so I'm going to get right to him. But Jessica put, I hope you check your Facebook messages as well as your email. And you know what? It's, for the most part, no. I do occasionally, but by the time I have 43, I'll check it now just for you. See, what happened was I got my official email, chickenwhisperer@chickenwhisperer.net is the official email. And then, you've got that email, and then you've got through that, which is fine. I've got that information form you can fill out on the website, which goes to that email. So that's still the same, kind of the same email. But then for a while on my personal Facebook page, Andy Schneider, I have those messages that I go through. And then all of a sudden when they changed Facebook to have the timeline, and everybody had to switch over to timeline, then they started having professional pages and fan pages have their own messages and emails. So I'm like, oh my gosh, so now I've got the Facebook message here, then I got Facebook message there, then I've got my email, then I got phone calls. And so I'm not a big fan of timeline anyway. So the issue there is I don't always check that email but or messages on Facebook. I guess it was on my professional page. I'll check it after the show or maybe during the show. But anyway, so yeah, me too, Trish. Wasn't a big fan of the NAIS, and I let them know. So, and they still wanted me to be spokesperson. How about that? So, all right, let's get over here to the switchboard, and we will bring on. What is it, man? You want to come sit in Daddy's lap? Huh? Come see Daddy. He's a mama's boy today. All righty, let's go to the phone lines and bring on our good friend, Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, founder of FirstStateVetSupply.com. Look him up online, FirstStateVetSupply.com. Yep, even Caleb loves FirstStateVetSupply.com. So, hey, Peter, how you doing, my friend?
Andy, how are you? Good one.
I'm hanging in there. Yep. And I think I posted on Facebook the other day. I said maybe I should have. My lost calling was being a trucker because 18 days on the road and then now another five. I'm like maybe I could just put a big trailer on the back of the Kia and haul some. Maybe we could make a few deliveries on our make a little extra money.
I'll tell you, that's my hat's off to him. It's a tough gig. Back in the '80s, I owned a trucking company, and
really,
used to haul produce from New York to Florida and in between potatoes out of Elizabeth City, North Carolina, champion truck brokers and so on. Sure, yeah, I've done jack of all trades, master of none.
There you go. Absolutely. Now, I respect the guys, you know, and it's got to be a hard life being away from the family. I mean, some people, I guess it's like any other job. It's in your blood, and some of them love it, some of them hate it, but they can't do anything else making the money that they're making. And actually, I saw a news feed on Yahoo just yesterday about how there's probably 100,000, no joke, 100,000 trucker jobs available right now, and they just can't fill them. I mean, it's amazing the number of jobs that they're looking for. They're saying, you know, 8 weeks of training, maybe $6,000 for the trucker school that you go to get your professional CDL, and then actually I saw some truckers that had commented on the story that they were making more back when they were trucking in the 70s and 80s than they are now, even though now it's still good money. And of course, you know, other truckers were commenting, yeah, it's good money if you stay on the road and you're maybe even been in the rules a little bit as far as how much you're on the road, then you can make some real good money. But I guess you know all about that being, and the fuel prices, yeah, you know, you fill up a tank and it's $700-$800.
Yeah.
That's crazy. So
yeah, I forget the percentage of goods that move by truck, but it's a huge
huge
amount. Yeah. Without truckers, there'd be empty shelves in the stores all over the place. No,
you're exactly right. Yeah, you don't have many train tracks running behind every Publix across America where they can just pull that train up to the back door and unload the cans of green beans. So yeah, it's got to be trucks. So
yeah. It's a tough job. It's a thankless job on many levels. I do agree that if you don't stay on the road, in most cases, not all, but in most cases, it's tough to make a decent living.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've known truckers over the years that didn't actually have a physical address. It was a P.O. box, and they didn't actually own a home, have an apartment. They stayed on the road constantly, you know, and then just came every time they were going through their town, or somebody phoned them the mail somewhere else, or to the trucking company that they were working out with, or the brokerage, or whatever. And some of them just, you know, and it's a life you really, really got to like it. I liked it. I didn't like the not making money end of it. You know, traveling over the road, certainly learned a lot. It was way back in my early years. My hat's always been off to them. Tough job when you've got, for the most part, a bunch of other idiots you've got to be on the road with, you know, that don't give way or don't respect. And by and large, it's gone back the other way, too. There are some truckers, obviously. It's never 100% anybody's fault that wouldn't give you a break either. So, but I think that's a learned behavior over a period of time of being on the road. You get so frustrated with it. You look at the thing, they say, you know, you just say, well, I'm bigger than they are, and, you know, they want to argue with me, let them argue with it, you know.
Yeah. So,
it's a tough job no matter what. But I don't know, are you ready to talk about some chickens, or what do you
want to
do?
I'm ready to talk about chickens. I'm ready to talk about the sense of smell. What a great topic. What an interesting topic. I know on the show in the past, Guy, we're coming up on 700 episodes, so, but we've talked about the eyesight and the eyeball workings of the chicken and taste buds. We've had specific shows about taste buds, hearing, but I don't think we've never done a show about their smell or sense of smell. Because I said earlier, you know, you see them move the feet around with their beak, trying to find that special morsel that they're looking for.
Yep.
Is that taste? Is that color? Do they taste this? Do they taste that? And their eyes are so important regarding finding that perfect piece. But I don't think we've ever had a show regarding the sense of smell. So I'm definitely interested in this.
Yeah, it is something that I've been working on, amongst other things. You know, I basically research, and, you know, always reading something new. I subscribe to some fairly heavy-duty sites that have about 50% of what you read is gobbledygook, and the other 50% you might be able to decipher what the hell they're talking about. You know, some complicated subjects and that kind of thing. But one of the greatest things to ever happen to both humans and chickens has been the mapping of the chicken genome,
mm-hmm.
which is all of the genes in the chicken's body. And it's an interesting thing that while we have a lot more base pairs of DNA. We share about roughly, depending on which piece of literature that you read, but somewhere around 60% of the genes we share with chickens. And what the significance of that is for humans and chickens is that a lot of the disease genes we share as well. That doesn't mean that these genes are always turned on. I don't know if anybody remembers, but there was, I believe it was from University of Arizona or one of those universities in the state of Arizona, if my memory serves me correctly, where he was doing some genetic work in relation to the chicken's relation to a dinosaur, and what he was doing with the chicken embryos was turning on and turning off certain genes, which then allowed the tail to grow long, similar to a dinosaur, which means that the genes are there, they're just turned off. And so this is all groundbreaking type of research. There's cancer research being done in relation to chickens, because technically the Marek's disease is a form of chicken cancer, and they want to understand how it works in the chicken, but that leads to how things may work in humans and so on and so forth. So it is an interesting thing. It's in its infancy. The chicken genome was only deciphered around 2004 or so. So there's a lot of work to be done and a lot of work being done. But in the they also found, you know, people will always tell you, well, the wild chicken, there's a big difference between it and a domestic chicken. And on a gene basis, that's not necessarily true. They found little difference between the original Gallus gallus and the chickens that we have today. But they have found some things that are very, very interesting and are being researched on the human side as well. There's an immune system protein that is shared as well, interleukin 26. I don't know much about it. I haven't had time to really look into it per se, but it is there, and it is part of a protein in the immune system. So, you know, down the road, who knows? It may lead to some more research for AIDS patients. And that's me talking, not research that I actually read, but you'd be surprised how these things, you know, pan out at the end of the day when somebody gets a hold of it and starts to really look at it. The chicken embryo is and has been used for quite some time to look at human developmental problems such as cleft palate and so on and so forth. And one of the reasons is that a lot of the genetic sequencing we share with chickens for deformities and so on and so forth. So they look at these, and one of the other reasons that they use the chicken is that it's a short-term growth cycle, 21 days, and you have a viable embryo that you can see what is happening to it through manipulation. And if you remember when we did the we talked about incubation. We talked about circadian incubation. We talked about the circadian clock and all of these other things. But during a circadian incubation thing, what they did was they took the embryos as they were incubating, and they changed the temperature over a specific period of time towards the tail end of the incubation process, and they change the temperature either higher or lower for a period of about 4 hours. And the raising of the temperature and or the lowering of the temperature had to be precise, so this took special incubation cooling and heating equipment to do so. But what they found was when they raised the temperature, the birds that hatched out had a greater tolerance to heat. This makes things a little different, and it becomes a big deal then, because all around the world, and you know, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, all these countries, certainly hot by any a person's stretch of the imagination, and a bird more tolerant to heat is certainly going to be one that somebody is going to want. And on the flip side of that, when the temperature was decreased for a period of time, they had birds that were more tolerant to cold. They also had birds that grew out better, gained weight faster, so on and so forth. And this was all through temperature manipulation. It had nothing to do with adding hormones or any kind of other stuff to it. There was no physical genetic manipulation of the egg or the developing embryo. It was all done through just raising the temperature or lowering the temperature for a specific period of time,
mm-hmm.
a specific day. So this is huge news. Approximately 75% of the disease genes in humans are shared with chickens and vice versa. So you can see that there's a big opportunity here to mine things that we didn't have access to before. So to me, it's an important thing. To the average person growing a chicken probably doesn't care quite that much. But to me, this is fascinating stuff. This is what some of what makes me want to get up in the morning and get going and do my thing and continue to look at these things, continue to understand it, and just increases every day my ever-expanding love for chickens. They're probably one of the most misunderstood from a human side because they become over the years in some people's eyes, now obviously not everybody's eyes, but pretty much worthless and useless from a standpoint of a dollar and cent thing, expendable, so to speak, I guess is a better word. But I've never seen it that way. Otherwise, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing. So in the overall scheme of things here, what they have found is that the answer to the question then, which would be, do chickens have a sense of smell? Years ago, when you look at research that's been done years and years ago, they did not have the genetic breakdown. They didn't have a lot of the tools that are here today to help decide on these factors. But in research that has been done, indeed, chickens do have a reasonably good sense of smell. So much so that we can, in the egg, manipulate the type of feed they may eat by exposing them to a feed that is, or an odor that is then applied to a feed after they're born, and they will more than likely, in the majority of cases, eat the food that had the odor that they were exposed to during incubation. More and more fascinating stuff. Just you wouldn't think it at all. And the fact that the chicken can be manipulated in that way is a huge thing because you can then, by sensitizing them to this, you can get them to eat the type of food that may even be better for them. As far as that's concerned, chickens their sense of smell even can change with the people that are taking care of them. In many cases, one of the reasons why the bird will generally get cozy with you is. Sometimes because of the treat you might be given, that's a given thing. But in view of that, there are other exceptions to that, and that is a friendly odor will allow them to take to you more readily. And this is one of the reasons why when you take a foreign bird and put it in with a group of birds, yes, the pecking order is there, but it is probably and most likely they have noticed that this bird doesn't smell the same. You smell different. And this has been done not only with birds, but it's been done with people by changing the odor of the person. A bird will either come to you or go away from you. So it's kind of an interesting thing. Their sense of smell is much more heightened than we had ever thought before. The smell of blood seems to draw them, to a another bird that's in trouble or something like that. And one of the reasons for that is that that may be an odor that may go back to even prehistoric times, so to speak, when birds, they're omnivores, they eat anything, so it appears to them, that this is something that we can eat, and that may be the basis for the beginnings of the attacks on other birds. More research needs to be done on that, but we do know that birds who are exposed to different odors after they're born will shy away from odors that they don't like. And one of the behaviors that they do this, chickens have a tendency to huddle. There's security and safety, so to speak, in numbers. So when they huddle up sometimes, they're huddling up because they are afraid. Sometimes it's obvious because they're cold, but barring that, when they get into an atmosphere where they're friendly with their environment and the different smells that are in that environment, you'll start to see them spread out. And that's usually a sign of contentment. Sometimes we'll take it as, well, they're just foraging over there because they like something over there, and that may be true as well. But as a general rule, the more content they become in their surroundings, part of it due to smell, they will spread out and not huddle up as much. And generally, if something in the area is upsetting them and it's an odor type of a situation, something that they've being introduced to them that they've never seen before, they may have a tendency then to come back together and huddle up and until they get used to it. So it's a kind of interesting thing. New places, different feeders, waterers, different types of foods being given to them. Sometimes you'll change the feed, and the feed having a different odor. It may not be the feed itself that makes them back away from it, but the odor. It's a new odor that they're not used to, and therefore they have to get away from it, or they just, they'll peck at it and they'll walk away. Now, you would think that a bird that is supposedly hungry would probably jump right in and eat anyway, and you will find those birds on occasion who will eat whatever, whenever, no matter how good or bad it smells. And that's more than likely goes back to genetics again. But by and large, we know that birds that are exposed to hot drinking water, as the temperature of the water rises, drink less and less, and as the water temperature reaches close to their body temperature, they stop drinking it altogether, even though they may be dehydrating or dehydrated at that point. They will just stand around and walk away from it as a general rule. Now, I know there are people say, well, yeah, mine drink it hot or cold, whatever. There are exceptions to every rule. But by and large, those are the things that drive the birds to do and behave the way they do. You might say, well, what does it all mean at the end of the day? If you are growing birds and you're growing birds for consumption, having them happy in their environment is a lot better than having them walk around all day stressed out. And a lot of these things... they're being researched out, not necessarily always for the backyard folks, but they're being researched out for environments where they're grown in more intense conditions. And the better off you can make their environment, the better off you're going to be at the end of the day. There's a huge study going on right now down at the University of Georgia, which I think is interesting. But if you are able to pull all these things together, a bird's sense of smell, a bird's sense of taste, their sense of well-being and everything else. So what they're looking at down there is when you walk into a chicken house, even if you are their caretaker, as a general rule, everybody starts squawking. It sets off even if they recognize you, generally it will set off a thing. The rooster starts crowing, the hens start clucking, everybody starts moving around, and you've upset their routine. After a few minutes, it all settles down. But what they're looking at down there is they are recording chickens in different situations, trying to find out what is an upsetting call to them. In other words, when you go in there and they're making a certain sound, how are they reacting with that sound? It's a difficult thing because they have a lot of noise to get out of the way. They've got fans running, they got feeders coming on and off, and that kind of thing, which clouds the issue a little bit. But they are making some progress, and they've got some things going on down there. But it'll be interesting to see when the study is finalized and published just what they do come up with, if anything, that's viable. But all of this is being done to put a chicken in a better environment, whether it be on the intense rearing side or even in your backyard. The happier the birds are, the more eggs they'll produce, the more weight they'll put on, the more food they'll eat, and so on and so forth. So all of this is in my eyes, from my perspective, a tremendous opportunity to learn. We talked about chicken behavior before. We talked about and we had an ongoing trial. And I haven't heard from Rob up in Massachusetts for a while, but the last email I did have from him concerning that trial, he at that point in time had only one bird he ended up putting peepers on out of that whole flock. And I think that's pretty amazing. And
he's in the chat room. He's in the chat room right now listening. So.
Oh, is he? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, he was busy. He had, his plate was full with a lot of other things, and he took on a tremendous responsibility just to gather up all the information. But that being said, he at least had communicated back with me what he had basically found out, the basics of it, and then he went on to purchase some more of the Replimune. He thought that did the best for him, and I wasn't surprised at that either. It is a tremendous product over the years for replacing those trace minerals that are deficient in almost every animal on the face of the earth, including humans. And it's a chelated product, means that it absorbs almost immediately into the system, so you get fairly quickly results, as did he. So we can see that there are a lot of parameters that go into a chicken's behavior, sense of taste, sense of smell, the nutritional end of it. And we look at that even then. You extrapolate that on the human side. You know, okay, we look at humans. We talked briefly about this, about probiotics in humans, and how we're finding now that maybe that does have an effect, the gut flora, on people who have schizophrenia and other mental problems and so on and so forth, and just overall, you know, good health. So there's a lot out there. There's a lot coming from chickens. Chickens are not as expendable in my eyes as people think they are. They're just as important as anything else for a whole lot of reasons. But when a bird gets excited, let me try to explain something here too. I think this is important because it happens in humans too, but more so and easier to do in chickens. When you upset a bird, and when you, so to speak, strike fear in that bird, it sets off a chain of events within that bird, physiologically, where the bird starts to give off a corticosteroid. And that corticosteroid basically shuts down all the systems in the body except those that are needed to function. It's called the fight-or-flight syndrome, okay? So fear in birds produces birds who stop eating, who vocalize more, who become more aggressive. There is more preening that goes on when birds are upset. That doesn't mean every time you see a bird preening that they're upset. But the fear factor for these birds, this corticosteroid opens up the door for disease problems. This would be the equivalent, so to speak, of stress in humans. We know that stress on people does a terrible amount of damage to a human body, whether it be mental or otherwise. So if you you know, look at all of these things. The happier you can keep your birds, the healthier you can keep your birds. It doesn't matter if they're kept in a run. It doesn't matter if they're running loose. It doesn't matter under any conditions. If they're happy, they're happy. If they're not happy, you've got problems. And those problems can be anywhere from a disease problem to a picking problem to all kinds of other behavioral problems, you know, that we've seen before. These are some of the negative things that you would see, you know, from birds like this. Now, they are, because of smell, and there may be some parameters for them looking at another bird and deciding. I haven't seen any research to show that a bird can look at another bird and say, oh, yeah, that's Harry. He's okay. it's generally done, from what I have found, to be more by smell. He can smell that Harry is a pen mate and that Harry is okay. Whether Harry and George get along is a different story. That's a different parameter that comes in. That's testosterone. That's being the leader of the flock and making George stay in his place. So that's a totally different ballgame. We did speak about that kind of stuff in the past. But by and large, birds have a tremendous ability to smell. And I think it's extraordinarily interesting to find that you can manipulate how a chick will act, and not only act as far as the hot and the cold aspect of it, but you can also manipulate the smell of the feed that they will eat by exposing them to that smell in the latter stages of incubation. I think that is just tremendous, and that may be why inadvertently some birds may eat different things that are raised in an incubator close to the kitchen. I don't know. I can't speak to that. I've not seen any research, but it wouldn't surprise me that some of their behaviors after they're born may be picked up in that respect as far as odor and things that they may or may not like. So it's a tremendous thing. And so to answer the question, do birds have a sense of smell? Yes, they do. They want to use a big fancy word for the terminology of smell. Smell works okay for me. I don't know about anybody else, but just to throw it out there for people who are a little bit more interested, it's called olfaction, O-L-F-A-C-T-I-O-N, which is the sense of smell. But it's really cool. You know, I've been investigating this stuff for a long, long time, and have reams and reams of articles and papers and stuff that I've looked at over the years. But they may be able to smell you coming. I don't know. But it is an interesting thing. There will be more and more stuff coming out of this human genome, chicken genome thing. They're just scratching the surface of it as we go along, because a lot of these things take a lot of time, and a lot of the things that come along, and you've heard me speak about this before, genetically, they try to use things that will mimic different things that they can extrapolate out to humans. A lot of the original genetic work was done with fruit flies, if you remember me saying that about a year or so ago. We talked about that a little bit, the Drosophila melanogaster fruit fly. And in this case, they're using chicken embryos to look at some of the problems in humans. And here's another thing that they're doing. They're able to, because some of these genes are old. I've seen some papers talking about some of these genes being 300 million years old. Mm-hmm. And again, it doesn't mean that they're all there, turned on, doing different things, but they are able then to look at the change in those genes from back then to now and see the differences and maybe get some trends and stuff. Really high-tech stuff, takes a long time to do it. So that's why they pick, in many cases, animals and or insects and stuff that reproduce quickly so your results can can come out quickly. The Japanese quail are used a lot for different things, hormonal things. They look at Japanese quail, but again, they hatch out quickly and they mature quickly. So it's really interesting. Anybody has any questions, they can certainly shoot me an email at chickendr@firststatevetsupply.com. Also, we had last time we had met, mm-hmm. we were really under a siege of hot weather.
Yeah, we were.
And I had a friend of mine. He's a how should I describe this? He is a tremendous artist, half-ass engineer. I told him what I wanted, and he drew some pictures for me of a homemade swamp cooler, so to speak. I got two photographs, well, not photographs, two artist renderings of something that you could make out of a box fan, a cooler with some water flowing through it with a small pump and some ice and some copper tubing coiled up and wire tied to the front of the fan. I know Walmart had this particular fan on sale a week ago for about $15-16. Not a bad idea. If anybody wants those pictures, you can make your own plans and list from there. Just shoot me an email, and I'll be glad to give them out to you free of charge.
So. Very good. Awesome deal. Yes, swamp coolers. I did a little research on that a few years back, and it was very interesting. I learned a lot about them. Pretty neat.
Yeah, you know, and this is something that probably, I would guess the little pump that you might need and to get enough water going through, that and the copper tubing, probably the biggest expense you'll have, but something you can reuse. And, you know, you're going to use it in emergencies and that kind of stuff, you know, when it's really, really stinking hot out. I mean, there's a lot of things you can do, but I thought it was pretty neat. Been looking at a lot of things here because I've got a chicken coop here that's got to be cooled and so on. So at this point, I'm probably going to go with an air conditioner because I'm super insulating the walls with about 3 inches of styrofoam and 3.5 inches of glass wool. So and the ceiling as well. So hopefully we'll have to have a $500 bill just to cool chickens, but we'll see.
Yeah, Linda was asking in the chat room, how do you all keep your birds cool when it's really hot outside? And I said, well, I put mine in the freezer with a nice Italian dressing paste marinade.
Well, yeah, I
got a few laughs in the chat room. Y'all know that I don't, you know, we've got our pet birds and our eaten birds, and they're separate. So don't start sending me bad emails. So,
yeah.
But, yeah, put them in the freezer with a little Italian dressing grenade, and it keeps them nice and cool until you're ready to harvest. Yeah, we go back and listen to the archives because, you know, of course, definitely you can answer how you do it in the chat room for the young lady. But, we've definitely covered how to keep birds cool over the last 60 days here on the radio show. Just head on back, look at the archive and the topic, and especially on this show with Peter Brown. As we've talked about it in depth, many ways how we can do that, absolutely.
Yeah, it can be a challenge. There isn't any question about that. You know, it's one of those things that you know, you take on that responsibility and some days when it gets hot, you know, we've had days up here where it's just so stinking hot outside. You don't really get that hot, but 101 is pretty hot and. You know, we get a lot of humidity up this way too. So when you go outside, it's just, just to walk to the car can be a chore. And
let me ask you this simple question, not really related. And then we've been on for about an hour, and I'm on the road, and I know you're busy. We can wrap it up unless you have something else. But let me ask you this: I've been starting to ask a lot of people since I've been on the road, different sponsors and chicken experts, and how you personally feel about. In this heat, in this humidity, I mean, record-breaking drought and just hot, hot, hot days, do you feel, because you sell them, that chickens are getting enough hydration if you have a nipple watering system?
Wow. If you have enough of the nipple drinkers and the birds have been properly acclimated to them, it would be the amount of flow of water that the bird is able to get. Nipple drinkers are fine. They're used throughout the commercial poultry industry. I don't know if there's a broiler house here now that doesn't have them in them. They've refined them, you know, that much over the years. But I will tell you this, that there are different flow rates for different types of nipples. So not all the nipples are created equal. So I would want one in the summertime that had a high flow rate that was going to allow a real good amount of water to come out, you know, all at one time. Now I've got a tremendous nipple drinker on there, and they don't sell worth a darn. I've given them away on this show, but I believe there's at least 10 nipples across the bottom, and it's automatic. It fills itself. It's got a valve at the top, and you just put a fitting on piece of hose that'll go from hose to quarter, your regular garden hose to quarter inch hose, and hook that to it and hang it up, and as it you can adjust it, and then that, it'll fill up with water, and as the bird drinks, it'll continue to fill on its own. I don't know. You've got to have birds that are willing to drink from it. Like I say, if they were brought up on it and started out on it properly, I see no problem with it whatsoever. What I see the biggest problem with is keeping the water cool enough so that they will drink it. That, to me, is a bigger issue, you know, that I see out there in this kind of sweltering type heat, more so than the nipple drinker. But the nipple drinker has been refined. A lot of the stuff that you see where they take a 5-gallon bucket and shove some nipples in the bottom of it, who knows what the flow rate is? I mean, like I said, the nipples are made for all different types of birds. They're made for broilers, they're made for broiler breeders, they're made for breeder chickens, they're made for laying chickens. So there's at least 3 to 4 different sizes of nipples, and they're like that for a reason. Bigger birds need bigger flow of water. Smaller birds need less. I guess in total answer to your question, under the right conditions, nipple drinkers are just fine. But personally, I would be more concerned with the temperature of the water that the birds have to drink. Because birds will drink water right down to freezing. But as the water temperature rises, they don't want to drink it. And once it gets over 80 degrees, they start backing away from it, not drinking as much. And when it reaches their body temperature, they won't drink it at all. And, you know, I know there are exceptions to the rule. I have to qualify to say these days because somebody, mine drink it all the time. Well, and they may. But by and large, as the water gets hotter, they do back away from it. So that would be my biggest concern, more so than the nipple itself. I'm an advocate of putting around as many waterers as your pocket can afford. If you've got regular waterers, put them out. Not going to hurt anything. A little bit more work for you, but just put them out. And that way they're never assured of being short of water. But nipple drinkers can be hard. A lot of birds won't take to them. You've got to work at it sometimes. And then I've seen other flocks of birds, they go right up to it, and they see another bird drink, and then they're off to the races, and everybody drinks. And I've seen others where they just dehydrate and die because nobody was paying attention. So it just depends.
Okay. I've just been just curious, asking around, seeing
what have other people have said then? I mean, is other people...
No one's done any studies. Most of them are like they haven't seen any problems with them. They feel like they're getting enough water. They're, you know, but no definitive yes, absolutely, because we know this or don't know that or anything like that. So,
well, the reason I don't make my own is for the reason I just told you. I can buy buckets cheap anywhere I want, and I have access to the nipple drinkers right here, 5 miles away from me. I got any kind of nipple drinker I want. But what nipple do I put on the bucket? For who and what? How are we going to do that? The one that I sell online is made for general purpose poultry. That's all I can tell you about it. But I know the nipple drinkers because, you know, I, years ago, worked in that field, and I know other people who work in that field commercially, and they are highly developed now. And a lot of the nipples that you see around are cheap, not made here. And that kind of thing. I mean, they have them now where and they've had to make them this way, where you have a fitting on a pipeline in a chicken house, and you've got this little tiny plastic tool, and if the nipple's leaking and you can't get it to stop, you just take this little fitting and you pull it out, and the nipple's got a little O-ring on it, and take a new one in there, shove it in there, and turn it a quarter turn, locks itself back in place, and go on with it. So that's how sophisticated they've gotten with them as far as, you know, that kind of thing is concerned. My biggest concern in this type of weather is the access to the water, and then the temperature of the water, and I don't care how they get it.
Right.
So.
Very good. Well, thank you for that very much, and we appreciate you again joining us today. Very, very interesting. And like I said, we'll probably, unless you have any other additional information or want to talk about any other topic.
It's up to you. have had some interesting things. You know, I've been doing this a long time, as most people know, and you know, I've said this before, if you live long enough, you'll probably see a whole lot of stuff, and I've never seen this before in my entire career, an actual case of what has been termed, and I have the report on my computer from the laboratory, and you know, we get critical lots of times of laboratory reports because they only look at a few certain things, whatever their pocketbook is willing to do. And I won't tell where this one came from. I don't want to talk about the individual at all. But I was approached by this individual with a bird who had what appeared to be canker. It was thought at one time, not by me but others, that it was pox. I was leaning more towards canker because this thing just hung around, the person who spent a fair amount of money on their end trying to figure out what it was couldn't figure it out. And I have to say, I didn't have a handle on it either. It was weird because when we used some canker medication, it seemed to get somewhat better, but it never went away. And which was odd. So then you start thinking, okay, we got some movement with it. Now, is that a problem with resistance to the medication we're using for canker?
Uh-huh.
So then you switch off to another medication, and that doesn't get you anywhere either. So finally, the bird did succumb to the disease, and the laboratory report from the veterinarian, and I will say this about the veterinarian. I've never met the individual, but it's one of the most detailed lab reports that I've seen in over 50 years of doing this stuff. I mean, this one had all the I's dotted, all the T's crossed, all the periods where they belonged, if you know what I'm saying. I mean, this was just very detailed, very succinct, one thing after another. Wasn't this, wasn't this, wasn't this, wasn't this. And then finally came up with the diagnosis that nobody else could come up with, okay? You know, you got to give credit where credit's due. You know, it's easy to criticize something that somebody else is doing when you haven't walked in their shoes and done it. And, you know, even the laboratory here, we had a sample sent here, and it did histopathology on it, and they couldn't, you know, get a handle on it. This laboratory came up with squamous cell carcinoma. Never seen it before in a chicken, ever.
Really?
Never, ever. And I was just floored by it. And, you know, I'll take it as truth. You know, nobody else could come up with anything, including some really highfalutin laboratories that were supposed to be, you know, state of the art. And, you know, in defense of them, not that they ever asked me to come to their defense, but, you know, you might say, well, gee, if it's so highfalutin, how come they get it? Because everything they do now is so specific. It's nothing broad. In other words, if you want them to look for that, you got to pay for that. So if you were looking for pox, they're going to run it and say, no, it's not pox. But they're not going to give you any other answer because they're not going to bother to run the test because it costs money. So you could spend a fortune, you know, and still come up empty-handed. So the test was run, and it came back that it wasn't pox. But nobody – I was running it on my end, and I did it free. It cost me $150 out of my own pocket to do this because I wanted an answer, okay? And even after $150, so you can see $150 that I got absolutely nothing out of. Okay. I'll tell you the tail end of that story because I think it's funny. So I did this, and again, I did it. Nobody asked me to do it. I did it because I was trying to get an answer. Okay. And my guy came back and he said, you know, I need more tissue. So I said, well, I'm not going to spend another $150. You know, once to the well is enough. So anyway, after that, I thought it was quite interesting. The individual who owned the bird wanted to try something that I had recommended, but then wanted me to give those directions so they could buy it locally. Where have we heard that story before? You know what I mean? And I just politely sent a little note back and said, you can go to the website, buy it, and all the directions come with it. And guess what? I've never heard from him again. So there you go. I think that's an interesting thing, to see something like that. You know, in your lifetime, when you've dealt with poultry on the disease side of it for so long, yeah, I guess if you hang around long enough, you'll see just about anything. But to me, that was, and I've kept the report. Of course, it's confidential as far as who, what, when, where, and why, and that's not the reason I kept it. I've kept it as a prize, so to speak, something that you've never seen before. Makes you then start to think outside the box a little bit more, too, when something has gone on for a very long period of time. And I also understand from that individual that there was another bird like that. So I'm very curious to, you know, why that's happening. And what I'm going to do is, and I just have not had the time, is get a hold of my guy here and get a conference with him and get his input into his, you know, so why it came about and so on, show him the report and what have you. So it's kind of interesting stuff. The other thing I've had is a lot of raccoon attacks. My God, if you got chickens cooped up, folks, raccoons are pretty smart. If you've got a little hole somewhere where you think they can't get through, guess what? They will. And I've had some of them just torn apart, and trying to put them back together has been a nightmare. So I would advise everybody to coon-proof your coops.
So on. Yeah, no kidding.
We've had a couple of cases of that have been pretty pretty nasty. Got a real bad case of sinusitis going on in a case up in New York State, and I don't know where that's going to end. We're actually making injections right into the sinus cavity now, trying to clear it up. It's just ugly. So that's about what's been going on, other than the fact that everything else, you know, health-wise for me has been going pretty good.
That's great.
Not too far off my target weight, and feeling pretty decent. Still working out 6 days a week. And almost to the 200-pound mark, so not too bad.
Fabulous, fabulous, fabulous. Congrats. I know it's, and you've been talking, you know, keeping us informed of that, and you're saying, you know, it's not a diet, it's a lifestyle, and you don't miss anything, and it's just all that great, fabulous, so encouraging for the rest of us. So that's fabulous. We're so
yeah,
glad.
Yeah, I know, you know, I'm not a doctor, you know, but I will put this out there for people, and I don't get it. So I've done a lot of research on the cholesterol levels and all of that stuff. You know, everybody has been told if you keep your cholesterol level below 200, you're okay. You know, mine wasn't crazy. It was 215. No history, you know. So, you know, when you look at it, and, you know, I've done the research, if you keep your cholesterol level below 150 and you keep your bad cholesterol level below 80, plaque can't form in your arteries. That's a fact. So I don't know why they're telling you 200, because, you know, with the way people eat, that doesn't mean you can keep your cholesterol down and eat whatever you choose. But I think you can, you know, make a conscious effort to do that. Now, to show you, and I know the show isn't about me or human medicine, but I think this is worthy of putting out for everybody, and if anybody can use it, fine. I dropped my cholesterol to 104 and my bad cholesterol to 42. That's right where I want to be, see, because, see, I got this blockage on the other side. The other artery was 50%. And the research shows that if you do these things, that that will clean itself up.
Mm-hmm.
And, okay? It'll take time, but it'll clean itself up, and you certainly won't be plugging it up anymore. And I am now up to 3.5 miles per hour on the treadmill at 12 degrees incline. And anybody's ever done anything on a treadmill, and I do that for an hour, 6 days a week. And, you know, I'm losing my weight slower now because I, you know, of the way I'm eating, the things that I'm eating, and now it's more portion control. But when I'm hungry, I eat. I am not going hungry. I'm telling you that right now. And I don't count calories, and I do not weigh a damn thing. If I want to eat half a big cantaloupe, I'll grab it and eat it. If I want to eat the whole thing, I'll eat it. That's that. And I've done it on occasion. You know, I when I get off the phone here, I'm going to have lunch. And lunch today for me is fruits and half a cantaloupe and so on. And you know, I'm just happy with what I'm doing. And I'll tell you this: cutting back on salt and the fats has enlightened my taste buds, so that there are other things that I would never put in my mouth that I now eat. How about that?
Right.
You know. So. It's been an interesting journey, and it's a journey that continues on, and it is a lifestyle change, and obviously I don't expect anybody else to jump on the same bandwagon. I'm fortunate that I have the ability to be quite anal about this thing, so it's made a big difference. I feel really good. It's just one of those things that you're either going to do it or you're not going to do it, so.
Yep, and out of everybody out there, you definitely had the wake-up call and the reason to do it. So,
I would say.
Well, Doc, thank you so much for joining us today. As always, folks, if you like what you hear, Peter Brown, the Chicken Doctor, joins us every Monday, and we encourage you to visit his website. He is the founder of FirstStateVetSupply.com, FirstStateVetSupply.com, and when you go there, anything you buy will come with this specific dosage you need, so you don't have to go out and buy the $120 Texas Instruments calculator to figure it out, and you don't have to sit there thinking when the bag says mix in 400 gallons of water and you have 6 birds, you can rest assured when you buy something like that from Peter, it will have all the directions you're ever going to need. And, you know, you're right, Peter, it's funny how people, they have all this time invested and money invested into their flock, and it just amazes me sometimes some of their reasoning behind that. But,
oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, one bird is worth to you what? I mean, you know, $25, the consultation you've got, the consultation program, nobody hardly ever lives around a certified avian vet, and so they can call you, get some good, reliable information. You've been doing this forever. You've got a reputation that just is amazing out there, and with the show folks and with the backyarders. And so, okay, $25, and you're going to probably buy some stuff that you need anyway to help save your bird and possibly your entire flock, and the $25 is waived when you buy what's recommended to save your flock to begin with, and you're getting the right information from a chicken expert, not somebody from an 800 number that had a pet at home. And that's it. So it's well worth its weight in gold. The, again, consultation program at FirstStateVetSupply.com. You can email Doc at chickendr@FirstStateVetSupply.com. And so appreciate you. We'll see you next Monday here on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
Look forward to it, Andy. Thanks.
All righty. I appreciate it now. And thank you very much for joining us, as always, folks. And the Chicken Doctor, Peter Brown. And we will return right after this short break. EggCartons.com, your discount supplier of egg cartons and poultry supplies. They carry a wide variety of egg cartons in paper, plastic, and foam,
as well as a great selection of poultry supplies, including incubators, brooders, waterers, feeders, and more. Order online at eggcartons.com or call toll-free 1-888-852-5340. Free full-color catalog available. Be sure to sign up for their online newsletter for more great specials. That's eggcartons.com. It's easy and rewarding to keep backyard chickens, and My Pet Chicken can supply everything you need to get started, including baby chicks, chicken coops, accessories, books, and free how-to information, plus fun gifts and rooster decor. At My Pet Chicken, you can buy as few as 3 baby chicks. They also sell fertile hatching eggs. Visit them online at mypetchicken.com. That's mypetchicken.com.
Established in 1957, GQF has become the name to trust when it comes to quality products and superior customer service. GQF offers a wide range of poultry products, including incubators, brooders, feeders, waters, and much, much more. Give them a call at 912-236-0651 or visit them online at gqfradio.com. That's gqfradio.com.
Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry, from rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams. Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com.
This looks like a job for
Super Chicken.
You get the super sauce. I'll don my super suit.
How would you like a punch in the beak?
Alrighty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Like we stated at the beginning of the show, on the road again, 18 days on the road, back home for 4 days, and now back on the road for 5. Got to love it. So we're going to go ahead and then wrap the show up. Let me tell you, we've got some great information coming up for you. Tomorrow, I'm working on a guest as the fifth Tuesday. We only scheduled the first 4 days of the month. So tomorrow being the fifth Tuesday, hopefully I have somebody in mind here, actually, if they're available, they can come on tomorrow. So I'm going to shoot for the show tomorrow. Wednesday, Garden Wise Living with Arlena. Of course, you can tune in and see what the bubbly of the week is with her wine choice, and learn about some year-round gardening. And then this Thursday, Dr. Bridget McRae, PhD, poultry scientist, will be joining us this Thursday. And then the only real questionable show is Friday. We may be truly on the road during the show, and we may not have a fun Friday, but we'll give those prizes away, hopefully, on our Facebook page over the weekend. Also, this Wednesday with Arlena, we hope to have all the details about our new chicken coop contest we're going to have for the month of August. And just gave away a nice chicken coop on Friday, and lo and behold, giving away another one in the month of August. So we'll have the details for that chicken coop contest as well coming up this Wednesday on August 1st. That contest will last the whole month, so we're definitely looking forward to that. So we hope you have a wonderful Monday. Remember, like we always say, if you can tune in every day, Monday through Friday at 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, not only will your day go by faster, but your week will go by faster, and next thing you know, we'll be saying, it's Friday. No, we'll say it's Fun Friday. So got to love that. And actually, I was just looking here on the computer, and it looks like that we have a special request from New Dawn Farm Girl. So here you go, darling. Bye. everybody. Thank you very much for tuning in today. We love you all. Thanks for tuning in. You can become a fan on Facebook at facebook.com/thechickenwhisperer. Hope you have an absolutely fabulous day, a wonderful, blessed day, and we will see you all here tomorrow on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer right here on Blog Talk Radio. So long, everybody. Oh,